Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Kimberly Hancher, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's Chief Information Officer. Kim, this is a return engagement for you. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here, Jason.
Well, last time we spoke, almost 2 years ago, let's start with some of those priorities you mentioned last time. You said at the time you're doing a workforce analysis. Give us a status of that effort. What did you find?
Well, the IT workforce analysis that we conducted really focused on identifying staffing gaps in both the headquarters and the field IT staff. EEOC is really a small agency. We have about 2,400 people located at 53 sites and the headquarters here in Washington, D.C. The Office of Information Technology, of which I am the director, had 50 people. And after doing analysis of the skills, we found that the biggest gap, the most critical staffing gap, was in the area of project management. We had only one trained and certified project management professional. So the agency permitted me to bring on 4 new project managers. We had a couple that came from other federal agencies and 2 from the private sector. And I tell you, they have been a tremendous addition to our staff. I remember shortly after they all started holding a meeting with the chair to introduce the new project management group to the chair. And when I looked behind me, it just looked like the dream team. Really high quality people with a lot of experience, background, and a lot of drive.
Was it hard to find those qualified people? Because project management is one of those skills in government that is always on short supply and always on high demand.
Yeah, that's true. We did do quite a bit of work in developing cadre of applicants. So we had a lot of very good applicants. It was actually very difficult to make the choice. But everything has worked out well, and the folks have found working at the EEOC to be very rewarding, yet still very challenging. Now, the other part of our workforce analysis was in the field. And although those folks do not report to me, I don't have chain of command to the field IT workforce, I consider them part of the IT workforce for which I'm responsible. So I partnered with the Office of Field Programs, which is their line management, to conduct the workforce analysis. And we identified 4 districts who did not have any IT staffing. Either someone's retired, attrition, or separated in some other fashion. So we have filled all of those gaps and, again, partnered. The success was in interviewing through an interdisciplinary team, local field supervisor, but also one of my staff participated via video teleconferencing or audio teleconferencing for all the interviews that were used to select the best qualified candidate.
So interesting, they had no IT staff. So was it kind of other duties as assigned? The person who said, yeah, I know a little bit about computers, I'll make sure they work?
That's right. At one site, and actually it was a really large site, Miami, with more than 80 people, it was the deputy director who had to fill that gap.
Let me move back to that project management, because again, as we talked briefly, it's a tough spot to fill. What kind of work are they doing? Did you develop a project management office and they take on a lot of your projects, or are they kind of one-offs, meaning we're going to send one person to this project and another person to this project when they're needed, when there's an opportunity for them to help?
When we first stood up the project management group, it was projects as assigned, and we had quite a few infrastructure upgrades that needed to be managed by a professional because we've had already obligated the funding, and we needed to really just work through and execute. You know, we were in the execution mode, and all of those projects went very well. And, you know, we have those behind us now. And one of the biggest advantages, I think, is that when you have, you know, a good project management group, you can get through sort of the business of IT quickly and efficiently. And then that gives us time and energy to focus on the real business problems of the agency, you know, how to reduce our cycle time for her investigation of discrimination charges, how to best put together a team of systemic litigators when we go to trial and that kind of thing.
Has the project management group been able now to work on non-IT related projects but are IT? Like if you think about, like, use your example to the business problems, a lot of them are not considered IT projects, but all of them, I'm sure, have an IT piece to it. Is that where they're really the values now coming from?
Yeah, it's interesting. The way that their responsibilities worked is that in addition to specific projects, project management responsibilities, they also have client liaison role, which is being the go-to person in the IT shop for specific lines of business. So one of them, for example, had Office of Human Relations and Office of Chief Financial Officer as their client liaison. So all of those administrative projects, moving our financial management system to the cloud, that fell to one of our project managers, but it was also his client. So he really understood the business drivers and how to support that customer.
And I think in the end, that's what you want project managers to do, is to understand and support their customer, not going to be the lead all end all for specific IT projects.
Yes, that really is the probably the most appreciated role, is that of customer relationship management. You know, being able to go to somebody, it doesn't matter if it's an acquisition issue, a budget issue, an operations problem, or just a dumb question, you know, that you want answered. You have somebody in the IT shop where the buck stops here.
Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hit upon that third priority that you mentioned last time we talked. But first, you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Kim Hancher, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's Chief Information Officer.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Kim Hancher, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's Chief Information Officer. Now, Kim, before break, we're talking about the last set of priorities that you told me about when we spoke about 2 years ago. One of those also included working on improving the internal technology to provide more robust analytics to the EEOC staff. Give us an update on how that's going and how is the EEOC using data analytics now?
I would say that we're at a solid sort of ground level in terms of using data. The data that we have, we trust. We know how to run reports against our mission systems. But what we don't really have is a flexible and friendly ad hoc reporting tool. So I spent some time just understanding what were the requirements that we have. And they really fell into three areas. The data that we're data rich, but we're kind of information poor. It's just very, very difficult to extract and then use EEOC data. So the three areas where I found we need to improve our tools to make it easier for customers is, number one, in the area of ad hoc reporting, being able to retrieve data sets depending on what you might analyze first may lead you to a conclusion that you need additional data in some other areas. So ad hoc reporting, the ability to visualize data. So rather than seeing everything in numbers, in table format, being able to see charts, diagrams, and other visual depictions of the data. And then the third area is what I would call drill down, the ability to look further and get more detail about the data. And at this point, I brought together, actually just a week ago, the agency SES community. That means the head of all of our different programs. And I called the meeting Making It Easier to Extract and Use EEOC Data. I figured that a meeting with a title like that would certainly appeal to this group. And what we did at that meeting is we talked a little bit about what are the databases that we depend on. And we used it as a sort of a facilitated session of identifying all of our agency data sources, many of which have never previously existed in electronic form. In other words, over the last couple of years, we've converted from paper to electronic data collection in the area specifically of federal discrimination cases. So there are two reports that have previously been gathered in paper format, and we're moving to electronic format. So those are two new data sources that could make up our data warehouse. We've got Oracle doing a discovery effort identifying all of the electronic data that has potential for a data warehouse and ultimately for a set of data marts.
And that's just getting started now, right?
It is.
And when do you expect that to be done, and you guys kind of maybe have a path of where you'll go next to kind of deal with your data analytics?
My view on data analytics is that I would like to see some quick results. I know that many agencies have undertaken data warehouse business intelligence and spent a lot of money. Unfortunately, we don't have money to spend. So I think it's going to be really important for us to put together some stories. In the Agile language, they talk about user stories. And I'd like to put together a couple compelling user stories to demonstrate how the data can be extracted more easily and then used for decision making. And that will be the next phase of this effort.
All right, something to follow up with you on in a couple more months probably. Another big priority last time we spoke was your EEOC's infrastructure and your move to the cloud. You mentioned the financial management system to the cloud, and obviously you also are moving an email to the cloud. Give us the update on those two efforts.
On the cloud-based services, we did indeed move our financial management system to the cloud. There's a small business vendor that supports the EEOC. We made that move in October 2011. So we've done one full fiscal year.
And how was that? Was it easy to get the data out of it? Was it easy to get the data into it during the fiscal year?
Comparatively speaking, that it was not terribly difficult. In other words, I've heard some real horror stories about conversion, migration from one financial management system to another. The biggest problem we had was in the contract data, just because it was not mapped properly from one system to the other. So I would say that was the biggest problem. We have a set of ongoing discussions on features and functions that need to be better sort of laid out for the end user. So we've been working pretty closely with the vendor on all of the outstanding issues. But as far as I know, we have a clean financial statement, and the system has been able to support us at, you know, practically a fraction of the cost compared to the system that we used previously.
Obviously, good news in these tight budget times. And I know, as you said just a little bit while ago, there's not a lot of money extra floating around. So if you can save a little bit off of financial system support, that can go a long way toward maybe some other things. One of the other things you did talk about as well is email as a service. Have you guys also moved to the cloud for email?
No, we haven't. I did some cost analysis, and believe it or not, we can provide email to our customers at a lower cost than the cloud providers can. Maybe it's because we use Novell GroupWise instead of Microsoft Exchange and Outlook. I don't know. But right now, my cost per user per month is about $4.60.
Wow. that is low.
Yeah. Until until some of the prices come down, I'm going to just keep it as it is.
All right. I think that's a good move on your part. Sounds like you've done your research.
But one of the other things in terms of cloud I just wanted to add is that we love cloud-based web meetings. You know, there's a lot of providers out there. They're all good. And we put out a procurement a couple years ago and have been so happy with the adoption of using web meetings. It's become a natural sort of extension of collaboration when you're working across geographically dispersed workforce. If I'm holding a meeting and I want to show you a slide that I developed, rather than emailing it to you, I might say, oh, here, I'm going to do a quick on-the-fly meeting, and I want to show you that flyer, and then I also want to show you some numbers that I've put in a spreadsheet. So the web meeting facility out in the cloud has been a wonderful part of our collaboration tool set.
All right, so you are getting good benefits from the cloud, even though obviously on the email side maybe cost you a little more. On this side, obviously, you can see the return on investment obviously more clearer than maybe just a cost-benefit analysis. All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to jump right into mobile computing. That's a big area for you guys. First, you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Kim Hancher, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's Chief Information Officer.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also...
that bid protest on the DoD contract.
Right. But did you know...
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about...
OMB's digital strategy.
Jeez. How do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know, because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Kim Hancher, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's Chief Information Officer. So, Kim, we've been talking a lot about your previous priorities from the last time we talked, over the last couple of years. One of the big priorities that has emerged for you guys over the last 6 months, 9 months, maybe a year, is mobile. And we're seeing that across government, the move to mobility, the bring your own device. And you guys have a great story to tell about what you did with your mobile device and you bring your own device aspect. Give us an update where you're at with your mobile computing efforts.
Last year, we had gotten our budget allocation for fiscal year 2012, and the IT budget was cut from about $17.6 million to $15 million, and that's nearly a 15% reduction, not just our operating budget. So I really had to look deeply to absorb these funding cuts, and we found that, you know, we could get some savings by reducing our contractor workforce. We brought our help desk back on premises instead of to an outsourced site and lowered the cost there. And then the third part was I looked at the mobile device, what we pay for Blackberries, and we were paying close to $800,000 for these government-issued Blackberries. So we targeted that budget for reduction. Took the issue to the IT Investment Review Board and suggested a two-prong approach to cost reduction and to revamping our mobile devices. What I wanted to do first was work with the vendor, the internet service provider, the wireless service provider, to optimize the rate plans for all of our agency-provided mobile devices. I also was interested in implementing a bring-your-own-device program, a pilot. The IT Investment Review Board backed me on that and supported both the reduction of our number of devices through the rate plan optimization and the bring-your-own-device pilot. And what we did was we put together kind of a BYOD team to lead the effort. So one part of the team pressed the wireless carrier, one of GSA's networks contract providers, to help us in cutting the costs or else risk losing the agency's BlackBerry business. And although that carrier was kind of reluctant to work expeditiously, we really stood firm in pursuing the rate plan optimization. I knew that it could be done because it's what I do on my own personal plan. When your children move from preteens to teens that text, you move to a different rate plan, one that has unlimited text, for example. And this is not terribly different. So we proceeded last year in December to analyze the data. And then in January, we put in change requests for all 560 devices to move the devices to a bundled rate plan with shared minutes. And we eliminated the zero-use devices that we found that we were still paying for. Zero-use devices are those devices where they've been distributed, but the person doesn't actually use their BlackBerry. It might sit in their desk drawer and only be used as a convenience every once in a while. So my message to those users was, I'm sorry, we can't afford that convenience any longer.
And what was their reaction to that? Because that's some people say, you know, I like to have a BlackBerry, even though I don't use it. Do they understand the situation?
Yeah, I really didn't get pushback from that part of the user community. I will tell you that the rest of the BlackBerry users, the ones who live and breathe and are CrackBerry users, as they call them, there were a lot of rumors. There were a lot of stress because the rumor was that I was going to eliminate the BlackBerry program. And so one of the things I had to do was come out and clarify so that people weren't unduly stressed and be clear that I really was trying to lower the number of devices and allow people who want to volunteer to opt out to join the BYOD pilot. And it took us a while to prepare for that. In January, February, March, what we did was we put together an analysis of what security features we would need to configure. And we analyzed the market of mobile device management software. All of us are familiar with the BlackBerry Enterprise Server, the BES. And what we found is that there's a whole host of providers that support Androids or iPhones or Androids and iPhones, as well as a couple other types of device operating systems. We piloted the use of a product. It just so happens it's a cloud-based mobile device management provider. So it really is just a matter of subscribing for annual licensing, which will allow that MDM to communicate with our email system so that people can use their iPhone or their Android to check email, synchronize calendar, and synchronize their contact information. Some people use tasks as well, but it's a real small number.
You signed up with this MDM provider, and how many people ended up in this pilot? And then give me a sense of where are we now?
We started out with about 40 people in the alpha pilot, and that was just to see if we were on the right track. And then we added a few more users during the beta, and it's during the beta that we actually wrote up a policy, a rule, set up the rules of behavior for bring your own device, and then configured the security settings on the MDM, which forced people who were participating in the pilot to, for example, set a password on their personal device. And the password had to have such and such complexity. And you only got X number of attempts to plug in your password, you know, before the device would be locked. And, you know, a couple other security features. So we actually implemented the security and the privacy settings in the January-February timeframe. And then in June, we finished the policy and distributed it to all BlackBerry users and offered them a choice. We said, you can opt out of the BlackBerry program and use your own smartphone if you would sign these rules of behavior, and we'll put you on the mobile device program, or you're welcome to use a third-party tool to access your email. The second choice was to return your device, and we would provide a government cell phone because you have bona fide use for just voice services. You didn't need the data services. And then the other choice was to keep your BlackBerry. And we found that 23% of our user community chose to opt out. But that means that 77% chose to keep their BlackBerries. So it was a really interesting sort of breakdown. So with all those people opting out, we were able to reduce our number of BlackBerries down from 560 when we first started all the way down to about 360 devices. We had a lot of zero-use devices that we eliminated, as you remember, during the rate plan optimization. And then we had another big number turn in their devices, and we disconnected them when they opted out to bring their own device.
Now, did you get to the point now where that was in, the June time frame when that happened?
Yes.
So now here we are 6 months later almost. Are you finding people coming to you saying, hey, you know, I saw that this isn't that big of a deal. I think I'm going to sign up and opt out of my BlackBerry and start using my iPhone. Are you getting some of those people yet?
We do have a trickle. What's interesting is I decided to survey the BlackBerry users on why they decided to keep their BlackBerry and what might change their mind. And it was really actually very interesting results. I guess the way it worked out is that most people said that they believe that work and personal should be kept separate. And that was kind of a revelation. I guess I would expect that maybe from the more mature members of the workforce, just because that's how we were brought up. And you only have limited personal use on a government device. But with the newer members of the workforce, the younger members of the workforce, I don't think that work, the distinction between work and personal on a device, is quite that crystal clear. So I think the data that reflected in the EEOC reflect a more mature workforce.
All right. You got a lot going on. Unfortunately, we are out of time, so we're going to have to touch base with you again, and definitely before 2 years have passed again. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Kim Hanscher, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's Chief Information Officer. Kim, thank you so much for taking the time to join us again on the program.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.